stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson and Chinese President Xi Jinping said that they are looking forward to a new era of cooperation between the two countries. After the two held a short meeting in Beijing, Tillerson said the U.S. is looking forward to a first-ever meeting with Xi and President Trump. An apparent reference to unconfirmed reports of plans for Mr. Trump and the Chinese president to meet in Florida next month.
President Trump places a very high value on the communications that have already occurred between yourself and President Trump, most particularly the very lengthy telephone conversation where there were very good exchanges to improve the understanding of China's view of the relationship with the United States and President Trump's view as well.
And she reiterated comments from his phone conversation with President Trump last month when the two leaders agreed to further U.S.-China cooperation. North Korea's news agency said they ground-tested a new high-thrust rocket engine today. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un said the test was successful and emphasized that the world will soon witness more. The test consisted of firing the rocket engine while it was held in place on the ground, not powering a missile. The U.S. Secret Service has heightened security efforts after a motorist drove a car up to the White House checkpoints late Saturday and claimed to have had a bomb. Officials say the driver was immediately arrested and the vehicle seized. A Secret Service spokesman said a criminal investigation has been launched. It was not immediately clear whether there was a bomb in the car. President Trump was not in the White House. In fact, he was spending the weekend at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida. This is VOA News. The eastern U.S. city of Philadelphia has canceled this year's celebration of Cinco de Mayo, an event that attracts as many as 15,000 people. Edgar Ramirez, one of the event's organizers, said the unanimous decision by the planners was sad but was the responsible thing to do because of the severe conditions affecting the immigrant community. Ramirez said the organizers were afraid federal immigration officers would stage a raid on the annual festival in Philadelphia, the country's fifth largest city. Officials say three suicide bombers attacked a village in northeastern Nigeria Saturday, killing four people, wounding eight. Authorities say the bombers, a man and two women, targeted a village. Victor Osuko, Borno State Police spokesman, said the bombers detonated the IEDs strapped to their bodies while running to different directions. Officials say a vigilante and a woman with her two children were among the dead. U.S. Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin said the meeting of finance ministers of the G20 countries was a success despite the ministers not reaching an agreement to fully oppose trade protectionism.
During our meetings over the last 2 days, we as a group reaffirmed our commitment to international economic and financial cooperation, a belief in sustainable growth in the world economies, our work to strengthen balanced trade. We discussed important exchange rate policies, the international financial architecture, and a desire for open capital markets.
Citing President Trump's commitment to American companies and workers, Mnuchin pushed back on and effectively omitted a ban on protectionism from the joint statement released at the end of the summit. Mnuchin did, however, say that the United States still believes in free trade. The European Union's international development chief warns President Trump's proposed cuts to humanitarian aid go against the global development goals of the U.S. committed to in 2015. Stephen Mimica says any cut or withdrawal of funds is counter to the goals adopted at the United Nations.
We shall continue to scale up our role as a global, as the strongest global actor in development policy. We need good partners to do it more in a synergy and with the highest possible impact on development needs of the world.
And Nevin Mimica was responding to a question about Mr. Trump's proposal to remove $17 billion from U.S. program budgets that send aid abroad. More at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clawton in Washington.
The government of South Sudan has not purchased any weapons since 2013, and that the right of South Sudan to defend itself like any other sovereign country in the world, even those who manufacture guns.
A UN expert report accuses the South Sudanese government of purchasing weapons while the country faces famine.
Once we arrived at that decision, the government officials immediately communicated with the Minister of Secondary Education, who went into action by extending the registration date.
The Cameroonian government extends the deadline of the registration for the General Certificate of Education examination to Monday.
When we did the follow-up of the cases, it appears communities have clean water supplies, but probably we're suspecting issues to do with food preparation and food handling that might have caused the problem.
And Malawi records fresh cases of cholera in border town close to neighboring Mozambique. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A confidential UN expert report says the South Sudanese government bought weapons while the country faces famine. This as thousands of South Sudanese refugees fleeing the ongoing conflict cross the border into neighboring countries, including Uganda. Military officials from the Procurement and Logistics Department reportedly leaked information about the Juba administration's weapons purchase. For the government's reaction, I reached Ateni Wekateni, the South Sudanese presidential spokesman.
The government of South Sudan has not purchased any weapons since 2013, and that the right of South Sudan to defend itself like any other sovereign country in the world, even those who manufacture guns. They are manufacturing guns in an attempt to be bought and sold by countries who wanted to protect their territorial integrity. But South Sudan is not buying weapons. That's one. Number two, the issue is completely mixed. If the United Nations is willing to help the people of South Sudan, because what is causing famine in South Sudan is not a man-made, but is because there is a war here, which, of course, people can call it a man-made. But the most of this is simply because the rains did not fall in many places.
The information of the purchase of the weapons came from the Logistics and Procurement Department of the Army, which leaked the report that indeed South Sudan bought ammunitions, and that led to several officers arrested and being punished for that matter.
No, I actually said categorically clear that South Sudan has never purchased any weapons since 2013, period. However, if there are weapons that were paid for before 2013 and then the delivery came later on, then is there for anybody to talk about. But South Sudan does not purchase any weapons. We don't need it.
So why is the government on one hand saying there's no conflict going on, yet the government is also insisting there's conflict going on? The SPLM-IO says its position has been attacked, and that the fact that the government has purchased weapons is part of the plan to attack its positions.
First of all, the IO is under Rabandengai, who is the first vice president of the republic. And those who are not with Abandengai are just, scattered bandits who are only capable of causing havoc and targeting civilians whenever there is the civilian convoy from the border of South Sudan to Juba, or from the capital city Juba to other towns. The real SPLM-IO is implementing peace agreement with us. And so those bandits who are causing havoc are still causing havoc, of course, to civilians, but as the president has launched the national dialogue, we cannot do both at the same time to go for operations, go against them, so that we flush them out of their hiding places, and at the same time sit and do a national reconciliation or a national dialogue.
Talking about national dialogue, why hasn't the president offered or extended that olive branch to Dr. Riek Machar to be part of the national dialogue. President Museveni in neighboring Uganda has called for a dialogue to end the ongoing conflict in South Sudan, which is generating thousands and thousands of refugees crossing the border and going to Uganda.
The government of South Sudan is not on offensive because we want to give time, you know, to those who are actually causing havoc to come and participate in a process of national dialogue. That's one. Riek Machar has been synonymous with the violence. Calling Riek Machar to national dialogue without any free condition for him to renounce violence, that would be a fatal mistake. And people of South Sudan will look to President Salva Kiir as somebody who is trying to perpetuate fighting. So that is why we thought Riek Machar should only come to the national dialogue when he renounced violence.
People who have resigned from the government have said Salva Kiir is to blame for the violence and that he is the one who has a militia that is targeting other ethnic groups and trying to wipe other minority ethnic groups out.
He's absolutely rubbish because Salva Kiir is the commander-in-chief of the Sudan People Liberation Army. And Sudan People Liberation Army is a national army that is protecting the sovereignty of the Republic of South Sudan. Regardless of who is the rebel, whether the rebel come from whichever tribe, 64 tribe in South Sudan, the national army deal with them, not on basis of tribe, but on the basis of the fact that they are outlawed and they are trying to challenge the sovereignty of the Republic of South Sudan. The defected gurus who just defect, they have defected, and therefore they have to say a lot of nonsense to try to substantiate their point. President Salva Kiir doesn't own militia because he's a commander-in-chief.
Attorney Work Attorney is the spokesman for the South Sudanese President Salva Kiir. He spoke with me from the capital, Juba. The Cameroonian government has extended the registration deadline of students for the General Certificate of Education examination to Monday. The beginning of the examination is scheduled for May 15 for the practicals, while that of the theory or written part of the examination will begin on June 1st. This is the third time the deadline has been revised, largely due to the ongoing teacher strike and the Anglophone crisis, which has affected schools in the Southwest and Northwest regions. To learn more, I reach Valentine Semakua, the head of the Cameroon Teachers Trade Union.
We received the decision with a lot of appreciation because it was like the government was listening to us, that for things to come back to normal, we think some concessions should be made to students schooling in Northwest and Southwest regions who have not been able to register for the GCE examinations because of the turbulent atmosphere we had there. And once we arrived at that decision, the government officials immediately communicated with the Minister of Secondary Education, who went into action by extending the registration date.
What about the parents who we understand have so far refused to allow their children to return to school? Is there any appeal for them to have their children back to school to begin preparations for the exams, at least to register for starters on Monday?
We have appealed to parents. We have spoken to parents who, by and large, were ignorant, and those who came to understand the situation after our explanations, they sent their children to register. I know what is most disturbing to the parents is the fact that the students have not actually been going to school for the past about close to four months today.
Preparation-wise, will there be enough time to prepare for an exam?
I think time is of essence in this particular matter. There is not enough time for students to adequately prepare for that examination. But as teacher leaders, we have made some recommendations, some suggestions to the government, appealing for an extension of the academic year. So we made some proposals and sent to the government, indicating that we would want effective teaching to continue through March to July, almost July ending, and then non-examination classes can now write their promotion exams while the GC is written in August. The difficulty now is that that program has not been made public because the government too is waiting to see how serious the parents are in sending their children to school. If that is not done, they may not be able to publish a calendar readjusting and extending the school year because they are afraid. If parents do finally not send their children to school, will they come back on their decision? But I think the vast majority of parents here are still very, very reluctant to embrace the idea we have been trying to push through to them.
Some Cameroonians I spoke with in other parts of the country are saying that it will not be fair to them because they have been going to school. The school calendar is set. Everybody in Cameroon knows when GCE exams are written, and that if an extension is given, you know, it will be a waste of time to both teachers and students in other parts of Cameroon. How do you react to that?
To be fair enough, they are right. They are right. But, you know, under very, very exceptional circumstances, some hard and exceptional decisions could be taken in order to bring peace, bring reason to prevail. It is true it will be burdensome on some school authorities there, especially the confessional and lay private school authorities who have to keep on paying teachers for which they had not budgeted. But we think the government can step in to rectify that situation, since we are thinking that if things went out of hand this way, it was not actually of our own making. And given the present situation, all hands should be put on deck for us to see a way forward. So they may be right in thinking so, but again, we still think that we are building we are trying to build our nation, and the different shades of opinion should be taken into consideration. And then government comes in to mitigate the circumstances and take decisions that will be satisfactory to all.
Valentine Samakua is the head of the Cameroon Teachers Trade Union. He spoke with me from Bamenda, the capital of the Cameroonian Northwest Region. Meanwhile, the Cameroonian commercial capital is cracking down on gang violence that has changed the lives of residents in many of the city neighborhoods. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka describes the effort to bring peace to Douala.
45-year-old Njaso Pierre, who lives in New Bell, a popular neighborhood in Douala, says armed gangs started regular attacks when one of their members was accused of harassing citizens and killed by a crowd. He says the assailants, who were previously attacking in groups of 7 and 8, are now coming in larger numbers and targeting people inside their homes. He says the groups are signaling that they will continue attacks. Pierre says the assailants attack using fire and locally made guns, machetes, and knives. Samuel Dieudonné Evaha Dibua, governor of the littoral region of Cameroon, where Douala is located, says several people have died and hundreds wounded. He says hundreds have also been arrested by the military, which was deployed to protect the population.
New Bell, Ngange, Bilonge, et tout ce que vous savez ne sont plus à la même.
He says New Bell and other affected Douala neighborhoods will no longer be at the mercy of armed groups. He says people who know the network of traffickers supplying drugs to the armed groups should inform them that the military will have no mercy when it starts organizing spontaneous raids. Douala has a population of about 3 million, a majority of whom are unemployed youth. Insecurity has always been present in the city, with broad daylight assault, but this is the first time armed gangs have been in running battles with the military. Moki Edwin Kinzeka For VOA News, Yaoundé.
Malawi has started registering new cases of cholera in areas bordering Mozambique. This comes a week after the government warned people of a cholera outbreak in the neighboring country. It said three people from Mozambique were treated as suspected cases at a health center in Chikwawa district bordering Mozambique. But now more people have contracted the disease. For VOA, Lamek Masina reports from the Malawian commercial capital, Blantyre.
Cholera is an acute diarrheal infection caused by eating food or drinking water contaminated with a bacterium. The disease affects both children and adults and can kill within hours if left untreated. Malawi last registered cholera cases in 2015, but now health authorities in Malawi say they have found new cases at a health center in Insanje district bordering Mozambique. Alexander Jua is the district health officer in Insanje.
So far, we have 11 suspected cases, all in the Mela Health Center. Here, we did what we call a rapid diagnostic testing, and it came out positive. We have currently set up a treatment unit there, and so far, nobody has died.
Jua said they haven't confirmed yet whether the outbreak is a spillover from Mozambique because none of the cholera patients had contact with anyone from Mozambique.
When we did the follow-up of the cases, it appears communities have clean water supplies, but probably we're suspecting issues to do with food preparation and food handling that might have caused the problem.
Media reports in Mozambique say cholera has infected more than 1,200 people, killing two this month. The outbreak is believed to have been triggered by tropical cyclone Dineo, which hit the country last month. In Zimbabwe, Health Ministry says it has so far detected three suspected cases of cholera in Chipinge district, which borders Mozambique. Aldrin Musiwa is the Deputy Minister of Health.
The area where the cases have been reported is adjacent to the border, where there is an influx of people coming from Mozambique. There are cases of cholera that have been reported in the adjacent Manica province of Mozambique.
Meanwhile, the governments of Mozambique, Malawi and Zimbabwe are urging their people to practice safe hygiene to prevent the further spread of the disease. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
South African music is about to lose a unique voice, multiple award-winning singer-songwriter Josie Field. She's leaving her homeland for London just as she's about to release what local critics are calling her strongest album yet. The departure of some of the nation's leading musicians has become common in recent years, with artists bemoaning the opportunities, recognition, and income available in a limited market. For VOA, Darren Taylor has the story from Johannesburg.
About 2 years ago, blues folk artist Alice Phoebe Lou gave this performance in a park in Berlin, looking for donations as a street entertainer. A listener invited her to perform at a function. Her career has since taken off. Last year, she released her debut record and on Wednesday played one of the world's premier music festivals, South by Southwest in Texas. Lou's just one of a growing list of South African musicians who felt compelled to leave their homeland to be rewarded for their art. Another is Josie Field.
I feel my sound and where I want to go musically, I've hit a ceiling in South Africa. The market is extremely niche for what I do. Nothing ever stays the same.
Like most musicians in South Africa, live gigs are Field's staple income, but in a depressed economy, they're limited. Despite the struggles, Field says she'll never regret the past decade of making music in the country of her birth.
I've had a wonderful time. There's no doubt that there are proper music fans here, but I'm now ready to take another step and hopefully explore how other parts of the world see my music and also grow as an artist.
Director of the Southern African Music Rights Organization, André Leroux, says it's natural for extremely talented artists to leave South Africa.
Dave Matthews Band is doing far better in the US than they would have done ever in South Africa. So when people grow a little bigger, it's time to leave.
But he adds that what isn't natural is that exceptional and scrupulous musicians like Field often can't get airplay in South Africa.
There is a reality of payola, which is corruption. Taking money where you're not supposed to take money to give people airplay, where you're not supposed to give them airplay.
Leroux also says South Africa's national broadcaster, the SABC, is failing to fulfill its pledge to play 90% local music.
Was it a policy that was put in place? Or was it a statement that was made? In our view, it was very much a statement made, because we haven't seen the policy position. Which radio station do you know that has paid 70, 80, 90, 95? Who's done the assessment?
The SABC insists its stations are playing mostly locally produced music. Leroux's adamant that the state isn't doing enough for music. Most public schools, for example, don't teach it.
Are those institutional tools in place to support an environment in which the arts and the artists can thrive? The honest answer to that is no.
The government says it's doing its best with limited funding to support arts. Field says another reason for her leaving is her disenchantment with politics in South Africa, something reflected in her track Born Under the Stars.
It's a song that has a political edge to it, coming just out of frustration for the future of South Africa and the leaders that aren't leading.
Leroux expects more of the cream of local music to leave the country, not necessarily because of politics or corruption, but because they're simply too big for the nation's small, underfunded music sector.
We don't have the ability to absorb them within our cultural space. That's the problem of the state. But do we like to see them grow? Yes. Those that go abroad, good for them. Those that stay here, let's build an industry together.
Ultimately, he says, South Africa should be proud that its artists like DJ and rapper Spook Matambo are successful worldwide in bigger, ultra-competitive markets. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Hello, I'm your host Shaka Sally. Every Wednesday night, the Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss Africa land reform. The World Bank says that Africa needs to change its systems for buying and selling land. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Batty, host of your breakfast show, Daybreak Africa. As always, our newsroom is on top of the news of your interest. We provide you with up-to-the-minute news about Africa as well as world news. Tune in to our show right here on VOA Africa, your trusted source of news and information.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Hello, Douglas.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. In African football, Madagascar's football chief, Ahmed Ahmed, was elected president of the Confederation of African Football Thursday, ousting veteran leader Issa Hayatou after 29 years in office. Ahmed won the election in the Ethiopian capital by 34 votes to Hayatou's 20. Ahmed, a 57-year-old father of two, had a discreet playing and coaching career before he took the reins of the Madagascar Football Federation in 2003. The result means a change in leadership for the first time since Cameroonian Hayatou took charge in 1988. Ahmed, who appeared very emotional, becomes only the seventh CAF president in the body's 60-year history. He takes over as CAF president on an initial four-year term and has promised to modernize the body and make it more transparent. The departure of Hayatou is a huge change for African football, and the 70-year-old will also lose his FIFA position and his place on the ruling council of the World Football's governing body. Meanwhile, Zambia are under-20 Africa Cup of Nations champions. They beat Senegal 2-0 in the final at the Heroes Stadium in Lusaka last Sunday. For Senegal, it was a tale of double disappointment, having lost the 2015 final on home soil against Nigeria. In the earlier match, Guinea came from behind to beat South Africa 2-1 and earned bronze. The top four teams of the tournament qualified for the FIFA World Cup. For more on Zambia's win and South Africa pulling out of hosting the Commonwealth Games, let's go to Samson Omale in Abuja.
President Edgar Lungu says the victory of the young Chipolopolo of Zambia in last Sunday's under-20 AFCON finals against Senegal is a demonstration that in unity the country has the power to rise above all social, political and economic divides. Speaking during the luncheon hosted in honor of the victorious under-20 national soccer team, President Lungu says the players have brought joy and great honor to the nation at a time when the country needs to be united than ever before.
I'm greatly delighted to host our gallant and victorious young Chipolopolo national football team, which has made our country proud and has put smiles on the face of all of us. It is gratifying that after the 2012 victory by the senior national football team in the AFCON tournament in Gabon, we have once more conquered Africa in football, and this time at youth level. My government, through the Ministry of Sports, will continue to provide financial support towards football development and other sport disciplines in this country.
Durban in South Africa will no longer be hosting the 2022 Commonwealth Games. This was after the country had already spent more than $7.5 million in the bidding process. Minister Fikile Mbalula said the South African government was embarrassed at the way the country had lost the right to host the 2022 Commonwealth Games.
The government of the Republic of South Africa wishes to express its disappointment at the announcement by the Commonwealth Games Federation to withdraw the country's bid to host a successful Commonwealth Games in Devon 2022.
Fikile Mbalula also mentioned that an operational budget could not be agreed upon between South Africa and the organizers of the Commonwealth Games. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Meanwhile, the African champion Zambia have been handed a tough opening match at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup in May following Wednesday's draw in South Korea. Zambia have been drawn in Group C alongside Iran and Costa Rica, and will also play twice former champions Portugal in their opening match on May 21st in Jeju. Senegal, Guinea and South Africa will also represent Africa at the event in South Korea. Guinea has probably the toughest group of the African contenders, being drawn in Group A alongside host South Korea, six times winners Argentina, and their old rivals England. South Africa will be in Group B and will take on Japan, Italy, and Uruguay, while Senegal will take on Ecuador, USA, and Saudi Arabia in Group F in the tournament, which runs from May 20th to June 11th. In another development, Malawi's football governing body, the Football Association of Malawi, says it's pulling out of the 2018 African Nations Championship as well as the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations because of lack of funds. Finally, in the FIBA 2017 Afrobasket qualifications for Zone 5, Uganda beat Rwanda 77-64 to qualify for the 2017 Afrobasket Championship. Egypt, also in the same zone, qualified after whipping Burundi 135-71 on Friday. The continent's biggest basketball tournament will be in August in Congo Brazzaville. And that's it for this edition of Nightland Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
Your girlfriend? What? Your sister? No, for me, it's my mama, my mother. Say, mama, bless me. Makes me life go better. Say, papa, bless me. Makes me life go better. Make I go post, make I go dengue. Make I no go live for me company where. So that tomorrow, I no go borrow. Hey, mama, bless you this week. Say, mama, bless me. Makes me life go better. Say, mama, bless me. Makes me life I go better, make I go pose, and then girl, make I no go live for me cup in the weather, so that tomorrow I no go borrow, huh? Say mama blessing is sweet.
Hey mama, me sweet sweet mama, no one feel like you, no one feel like you, me sweet sweet mama. Like you not quit low, mama. Like you not get for they give me yo, mama. I appreciate you, I love you, mama.
Mama bless me, yo. Me this me life ya go better. Say papa bless me, yo. Me this me life ya go better. Make I go pose. And then girl, make I no go live for me cup in the weather. So that tomorrow, I no go borrow. Try, say mama bless me this way. Say mama bless me, listen, me this me life ya go better. Say papa bless me, they got like a ganga. Me this me life ya go better. Make I go pose. And then girl, make I no go live for me cup in the weather. So that tomorrow, I no go borrow. Try, say mama bless me this way. Break low. Say mama, you are not back and kill it down, crack it down, come. I'm dancing, huh. Say for me, mama, say baby, I go love you, rara. No woman is like you, nobody is only like you. Say mama, I give you the chance and praise. Mama, you're so wonderful. When nobody's by me, mama, you stand by me. When nobody's near me, mama, you give me the courage. When I don't get no money, mama, you the same, make a pressure. So mama, I beg I don't. Say mama, bless me, makes me life go better. Say papa, bless me, makes me life go better. Make I go post, make I go dengue. Make I no go live for me cup in the weather. So that tomorrow, I no go borrow. Hey, mama, bless you this week. Say mama, bless me, makes me life ya go better. Say mama bless me, makes me life ya go better. Make I go pose. And then girl, make I no go live by me cup in the weather. So that tomorrow I no go borrow. Say mama bless me,
mama usa you deal. Mama usa you don't go and left me all night. Say I no go forget you. Say I no go forget you sweet love and more. You raise me up like every day. You make that team up like my big guys. Mama look money day. Mama look o se mutuka day. Say mama usa you day. Hey mama. Mama usa you day.
Your beauty, they give me fever. I go be your defender. person. My baby too fine, yo. Anytime I see her, now walk up. My baby too sweet, yo. Anytime I see her, now walk up. Take a kiss in my. Oh, yeah, chop the kiss in my. I'm gonna get you go yet. Oh, yeah, take a kiss in my. I'm gonna get you too fine, my baby. Where you better kiss in my. Oh, baby, where you better something, yeah. I make you lock up my lips and yeah. I'm gonna get no time, yeah. I wanna kiss your soul away. Hey. Oh, dear food, dear song. Whoa, 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 whoa. Oh, Mali Chani, give boom, Mali, whoa. Baby girl, you go kill a person, no. Whoa, 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 whoa. Whoa, 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 whoa. Oh, Mali Chani, give boom, Mali, whoa. Baby girl, you go kill a person, no. Whoa, 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 whoa. What a missing one. Whoa, 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 baby, kiss him, ma. Take a kiss him, ma. Oh, yeah, chop the kiss in my. Oh, no. I'm gonna get to go yet. Oh, yeah, take a kiss in my. Hey. I'm gonna get you too fine, my baby. You will be the kiss in my. Oh, what a miss in my. I'm gonna be the kiss in my. Hey. Take a kiss in my. Oh, yeah, chop the kiss in my. Oh, no. I'm gonna get to go yet. Oh, yeah, take a kiss in my. Hey. I'm gonna get you too fine, my baby. You will be the kiss in my.
Girl, I know how you dey feel. That kind of feeling you dey feel. Now the same way where I dey feel. But we know come sure if it be real. I know you want chop a banku. Boy, I need bello my darko. Honey, it's a critical situation. Very tempting association. Chukuma, you break your heart. Eugenia, she teeth your man. And if best fit, take your man. I'm sorry to say that it's not your man. Waiting be your own. Be your own, leave them alone. We take it one step at a time. We go get there somewhere, somehow.
Hold on. When the ends are, you go feel love. Make you no rush, there's love. Hold on. When the ends are, you go feel love. Hold on. When it's inside.
Like Russian roulette, you know, yeah. I know, say your time, they go. But that don't mean say romance, be true love. Oh, baby, take your time, you know. Cause when love holds you, now there you go, no. For now, let's chill as we proceed, now there you go, no. Chukuma, we break your heart. Eugenia, she teeth your man. And if best fit, take your man. I'm sorry to say that it's not your man. Waiting, be your own, be your own. You know, be your own, leave him alone. Take it one step at a time. We'll go get there somewhere, somehow.
Hold on. When the ends are, you go feel love. Make you no rush, there's love. Hold on.
When the ends are, you go feel love. Go feel love. Yeah. Hold on. When it's inside. Russian roulette, you know, yeah. I know, say your time, they go. But that don't mean say romance, be true love.
Your sexy girl is over. You go sweetie, if you know right. You know I'm tempted to touch you.
Hold on.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under-Secretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Last
weak elections in the Netherlands or Holland, which was closely watched by the international community, has been able to put a brake on the anti-immigrant momentum in Europe. While it is true that the leader of the Freedom Party, the anti-immigrant party, Geert Wilders, gained 5 seats and now ranks second in the parliament with 20 seats, the European leaders were very pleased that he did not emerge as the victor because of the fear that he may have taken Holland out of the European Union. It is also true that other establishment parties, like the party of the Prime Minister and others, lost ground. But what is surprising is the fact that the most important outcome has not been given sufficient prominence by the international media, nor by analysts of the elections. It should be recalled that Mr. Geert Wilders began his campaign to attack Moroccans in Holland. From there, he moved on to an anti-Islamic rhetoric, an anti-immigration rhetoric. In fact, he said that had he won, he would have banished all mosques in Holland. Well, the party that gained the most seats in the election is a party led by a Dutch-Moroccan. The Green Left Party gained the most in the election, 10 new seats, and now has 14 seats in parliament. This shows that the people of Holland were not fooled by the anti-immigrant rhetoric, because the Green Left was very inclusive and very progressive. The question will be whether the new coalition will include the Green Left. That will be the challenge for the Prime Minister. But the name of the leader of the Green Party may not sound like a Moroccan, but he is called Jesse Claver, and his father was a Moroccan, and his mother was Dutch-Indonesian. So this is a new phenomenon, to see whether this will bring a change in the politics in Holland. There is another element which has not been fully analyzed, and that is the turnout in the election. The turnout in this election was a 30-year high, 80.2%. This is extremely high in all recent elections in Europe and even in North Africa. Elections in the United States seldom get beyond 60%. And the lesson one could draw is this. When the turnout in elections are modest or small, extremist parties which are anti-immigrant, they do extremely well. But when you have a large turnout, like we have just now in Holland, they do not do so well. And this will be a lesson for the next test for the anti-immigrant movement in France in 5 weeks about turnout, and also in Germany in September. So while everyone is pleased that Geert Wilders did not make it, and everyone is saying that he might the next time, one should not lose sight of the fact that the one that made the biggest gain is a Moroccan, and Moroccans have been the butt of the criticism, even though they represent only 2% of the population of Holland. This is something which has to be watched very carefully, and Africans in particular, who are in large numbers in Holland, should take some comfort that a party led by a Moroccan has done so well in the elections. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, Managing Editor Shaka Sale, Reporter Douglas Mpuga, Producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Michael Dubinsky, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, only a medicine man gets rich by sleeping. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
As has been the case in previous years, human rights conditions in Zimbabwe remain deeply troubling, according to the recently issued State Department country reports on human rights practices. In 2016, the government of President Robert Mugabe continued to violate human rights, disregarding the protections enumerated in the country's 2013 constitution. The most important human rights problems remain the government's targeting members of non-ZANU-PF parties and civil society activists for abduction, arrest, torture, abuse, and harassment, partisan application of the rule of law by security forces and the judiciary, and restrictions on civil liberties, including freedoms of expression and assembly. In 2016, the government intensified its repression of peaceful protesters. Police abuse increased, and security forces used excessive force to crush dissent. Human rights defenders, civil society activists, journalists, and government opponents were harassed, threatened, or faced arbitrary arrest by security forces. The government restricted freedom of the press. Although citizens have the constitutional right to choose their own government in free and fair elections, this right was restricted. Corruption at all levels of government was rampant in Zimbabwe. Despite the fact that the government took some limited steps to punish security sector officials and ZANU-PF supporters who committed violations, impunity for past politically motivated violence was a problem. The government, for example, failed to provide any updates on the 2015 disappearance of activist Etai Zamara. Rape, domestic violence, and discrimination against women remain widespread problems, despite the fact that last January, Zimbabwe's constitutional court declared child marriage to be unconstitutional and set 18 as the minimum marriage age. The government has yet to amend or repeal all existing marriage laws that still allow child marriage. On the other side of that spectrum, widows were forced from their marital homes by relatives and their property confiscated with little recourse to the formal justice system. The State Department human rights reports are not meant to point fingers or judge the actions of sovereign nations, nor are these U.S. policy documents. The reports do not draw legal conclusions. Promoting human rights and democratic governance is a core element of U.S. foreign policy, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. Standing up for human rights and democracy is not just a moral imperative, but it is in the best interests of the United States in making the world more stable and secure.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.